Okay, so here are the rails. And here is our show.
Completely off. Completely gone today. What in the world? Derailed.
Yay, you're here. Welcome to the CK and GK podcast. Let's get going.
It's Tuesday.
She's so peppy, guys. It's Tuesday. She's good at being peppy.
It's Tuesday on summer vacation.
For some people, they're on summer vacation. She did earn it. To be fair, she totally earned that summer vacation. You know, you put in a lot of extra hours during the school year. You get to enjoy those benefits during the summer.
Welcome to CK and GK. If this is your first week, welcome. If you are coming back, I am so glad that you are hearing from us again.
Yeah, we're so happy you're here, guys.
Yeah. So with me, I have Caitlin, the woman who deserves lots of credit. And if we were to pay teachers more, maybe she wouldn't need it.
Oh, man. That's true. Maybe I wouldn't. That's a fair point. So she's Jenny. She is the one true love of Sam Malone. Do you know her name? Diane Chambers.
Oh my gosh. That's so good.
That y'all should see her face. Good. She's so happy.
Okay. So, you know, like deep in COVID. We're talking 2020, like April, right? John and I watched all of Cheers.
Why doesn't that surprise me at all? I am not even the slightest bit like, that sounds exactly.
Sam Mayday Malone.
Yep, oh, yeah, exactly. No,
we watched all of it.
Sam Mayday Malone, the recovering alcoholic who owns a bar. Like, what? I don't understand.
Norm, who is constantly complaining about his wife, who we never meet.
What's the postman's name? Cliff. We don't know. He's Cliff. Not married.
Oh, yeah. No. He's not married. He lives with his mom.
That's right.
He moves out at some point, but yeah.
I knew there was a woman in his life for most of it, but then, yeah, he does.
Do you know that the person who plays Cliff, John Ratzenberger, has been in every single Pixar movie?
I did know that, and they're very intentional about it. Like, he will show up some way, shape, or form in every single movie. I love it.
They say that he's their good luck charm. So he's been in every single one.
He's got it made, dude.
Right?
He has got it made.
Did they look at his IMDb and just be like, oh, I'm Ham the Pig. I'm this fish. I'm right. This, I'm this, I'm this. I'm
yeah.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't they figure out, I think they did for Owen Wilson, like the amount of words that he says in Cars, it's either 2 or 3. It might be 3. The amount of words that he says is so few that he gets paid like it's like a few thousand dollars per word, including like a and the. It's insane that he got paid. And that's like his fee before royalties and stuff like that. That was his that's speaking funny. Fee.
I want. Well, you know the movie Sleeping movie. Beauty.
That's my favorite Disney movie. Princess.
Is it really?
Okay, yeah, that's so my favorite Disney movie.
Name Aurora, who has 19 lines in the film. 19.
That's it? She sings.
That's it. She
those
sings.
I
know you.
Yeah, exactly. I loved that princess, and it makes me mad when I see every Disney display, she's always wearing the pink dress.
The and you're like, no, dress, the blue dress.
No, it's the blue one, because that's the one that's in the movie the most. The pink dress is just what you see at the end, because Meriwether and Flora are fighting.
Dork!
Everyone needs a chance to be a nerd on this show. That was mine. I got mad, too. I'm like pointing. All right.
So those of you who are here for the very first time. We are a how-to show. And so the idea here is that once a week we get together and we talk about something that we had to learn, and maybe we can cut out the embarrassment and you can learn it from us. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, we have to have circle time. We have to sit on the carpet, crisscross applesauce, and have a share.
Mm-hmm. True.
So we are starting with some sports news.
Okay, start us off.
Okay, so if you can call professional wrestling a sport, I have some sports news.
People are going to start screaming. Them fighting words. No. I would say professional wrestling, sure. I'll allow it.
Okay. Yeah. So when our baseball boys could not figure out how to make the millionaires talk to the billionaires and we could play. Like,
all get along.
Professional wrestling was like basically the only thing we watched. And my husband is a child of the 90s and like grew up with this stuff, right? And so we decided to watch wrestling this week. And I am not even kidding you. This story is so crazy. It doesn't matter if you're a sports fan or a wrestling fan or not. You have to talk about this.
Okay, I'm going to pause you just for a second. We decided to watch wrestling, or the wrestling was on the television and your eyeballs were forced to participate in the watching?
I took my food to the couch and watched it.
Okay.
Okay. So here's what happened. At the beginning of the, what do you call it? Episode, match? I don't know. Like, you know.
Fight? Yeah, okay. Wrestling match? Sure. Yeah.
So at the beginning, they said, hey, Cody Rhodes got hurt this week. And when he was lifting weights, like in his normal workout, his pec ripped off his chest bones. And he's still going to wrestle. And I'm like, that's weird. So when he comes out, like, I don't know if you've ever watched professional wrestling, but no. Like, there's lots of hoopla and there's singing and like there's music and fireworks and stuff. And like,
fireworks.
I don't know.
Isn't it inside? Oh, okay. I guess those are fireworks.
He comes out in this jacket.
Oh.
And his little like wrestling bike shorts, whatever. I don't know.
Spankies.
Anyway. Yeah. But he's got this jacket on and he like walks out. And this special match that he's having with Seth Rollins is called Hell in a Cell. And so they like lock you into this chain link cage thing.
Okay? Oh no.
I don't know about this. This is my first time to see Hell in a Cell. And he steps into the ring and he takes off his jacket. And dude, I'm not even kidding you. His whole pec and arm are purple with bruises.
No.
And his nipple on the injured side is like 2 inches lower than the other side. Like, you can see that the muscle is literally hanging inside his flesh.
Meanwhile, breastfeeding moms everywhere are like, hey, welcome That's to normal. The club.
Oh my God. It's insane. It is a color I have never seen human flesh be.
Oh my
before.
God. I'm so disgusted.
It goes up over the shoulder and down the arm. Okay. And of course, like, Seth Rollins is like, oh, I'm going to, you know, take advantage of this. So he's like punching him in the pack and like grabbing his arm. I'm telling Johnny the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, this is immoral.
Yeah, this is wrong. Unethical. This is like, not this is okay. Wrong. Yeah.
Why did they let him do this? And they're like, well, you know, they probably gave him some kind of painkiller before he went out there.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm just like, I can't even believe we're watching this. Like, why are we giving this ratings? Meanwhile, I cannot take my eyes off the train wreck, right? I am watching on bated breath. Like, what is going to happen with this guy whose muscles are not attached to his body?
This is so gross.
It is so nasty. And like, he cannot move his arm in a normal way. I mean, it is gross.
Oh my God.
But he wins.
Stop. What?
No. He wins. And I mean, I don't know. Like, do they stage it? Of course. Is it like predetermined who wins? Probably. Right? It's professional wrestling. They even call it like sports entertainment because they can't call it a real sport. But I read an article published by a real MD, a legit doctor, saying that injury was as bad as it could be. So it's really not that bad for him to wrestle because he couldn't hurt himself more unless he had hurt something else trying to compensate for that.
See, but oh,
He's going to have surgery to reattach his muscles to his bones.
Oh my God.
Hey, dude, remember that time your pectoralis major fell off your body?
Oh my God. How can this man not have injured himself any further? I don't understand. Also, ew. It's just so gross.
It was so grody. It was so nasty. And yet, I could not stop watching.
Yeah, that's nasty. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, I'm going to shift gears.
You might have some like heartwarming story in here. I'm like, oh, the guy's
I do have a heartwarmer. I'm just going to switch gears to that because I don't want to think about the man's purple nipple hanging all the way down to his knees. So gross. Okay, we're moving on. All right, so June is Pride Month. Yes. Yes. I would like to extend my deepest and most heartfelt congratulations to Justine Lindsay because Justine Lindsay is the first openly transgender cheerleader in the NFL and she's cheering for the Carolina Panthers. Yay! Wow. So, yeah, she came out publicly earlier this year as a trans woman and her hopes are to shed some light on the many ways that trans women are just killing it out there every day. So congratulations to you, Justine. I'm going to be keeping my eyes on the Carolina Panthers Top Cats is what the cheerleading squad is called. Congratulations.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
I know. I love that.
Let me tell you what happened this week.
More wrestling?
Oh my gosh. No. And also, how sad am I that like the thing I want to bring to the sports news table is wrestling? Okay. I am not in favor of wrestling. This is like not a fan thing. Okay. You know, I just thought it was amazing that this guy was purple and his muscles fell off his bones.
I didn't even know that could happen. I'm sure that I knew it could, but.
Oh, it happened to Johnny.
Stop it. Ew.
And, but not his pec. No, his biceps tendon ripped.
Oh,
and so
yeah,
they had
to
reattach his biceps to his arm.
Yeah. I know someone that happened to also. Yeah. But just back to your sports contribution real quick. I am someone who likes boxing, weirdly enough. Like I'll, you know, as much as I'm like, this is barbaric. We need to stop it. Why are we doing this? No, 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 no. We shouldn't be one. And then I'm like, hit him. Hit it. No, not there. Oh, his jaw's made of glass. And I'm just like screaming.
Oh my gosh. This is like my brother played lacrosse.
Yeah.
When he was in high school.
Yeah.
These lacrosse moms, they are sitting there with their little Yeti cup full of coffee and maybe Bailey's. I'm not sure. Yelling, hit him! Hit him with your stick! I didn't buy titanium for you not to check somebody!
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hardcore life for sure. Okay.
Okay, so in Austin this weekend was the television festival. And this has been going on for like 11 years. Okay. And they have all kinds of cool reunions each year. And they bring in awesome speakers. And this year, somebody that I have totally fangirled over since the very beginning of his series, Phil Rosenthal, was a speaker.
Okay. Now, we need to talk about who Phil Rosenthal is because
we do.
If you don't know who he is, there's a really good chance you actually do know who he is. You just don't know his
name.
You do know
who he is. Right.
Yes.
That's exactly the point. Okay. Right. So Phil Rosenthal is the writer creator of Everybody Loves Raymond.
A true gem of a show. I loved that show. I thought it was hysterical. And for a while, I bet every housewife in America could have related to that. Or
Absolutely.
Every married person in America could have related to that show. It was so good. So good.
Well, he has also written a lot of other sitcoms, but that's like what he's most famous for.
Mm-hmm.
He started in his second chapter of life. He said, I want to do a travel show, but instead of having it be wild, I want it to be very accessible and just talking about the joy of travel. He gets picked up by PBS.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, look, we'll do 6 shows with you. You can pick 6 locations across the world,
mm-hmm.
and we'll pay for you to go and film and talk about the joy of eating and the joy of experiencing another culture. So actually, Phil Rosenthal at this point calls his brother, Richard, and said, dude, I just got this gig with PBS. I'm going to do a travel show, but it's all about eating. And his brother, Richard, said, what's the name of the show? The Lucky Bastard? How do you get to do this?
And Phil says, no, I want you to quit your job. Oh. Come produce my show. And we will start our own production company called Lucky Bastards. It'll be the two of us.
I love it.
Isn't it adorable?
Yeah, it's very cute.
So he and his brother do the show for PBS. They do 6 episodes. Well, it is awesome.
Yeah,
and John and I discovered it when it was on PBS. And at that point, it was called I'll Have What Phil's Having.
Mm.
It got picked up by Netflix,
mm-hmm.
reworked, and called Somebody Feed Phil. Well, now it's in its like 5th or 6th season on Netflix.
Yeah,
it is the number one unscripted show on Netflix. It is the number 5 overall show on Netflix.
Now, I want to just really quickly explain what makes it that for me. Somebody Feed Phil, first of all, the opening song is hysterical and precious. It feels very old-timey, sitcom-y.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, for
it's
sure.
So
it's
great.
Got this kind of Phil Spector vibe. Like yeah, it sounds yeah right? Yeah. Like 1960s.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Then you watch this show. If you're somebody who enjoys Queer Eye because it makes your heart happy.
Right.
Somebody Feed Phil will do that for you without the sobbing at the end. Does that make sense?
He is the embodiment joy. Of kindness.
It is joy. I just watched the episode just the other day of when he went to the Mississippi Delta, and he is welcomed and welcoming to everyone. It was amazing. We watched the San Francisco episode the other day because my husband recently went on a work trip to San Francisco. He's just so stinking happy all the time. It's so right. precious. Pure joy and kindness in just one little person, but he's also so funny. So you just enjoy him. And when you watch the show, you'll see his wife and you'll recognize his wife from Everybody Loves Raymond. She was the older brother's wife, Amy, in the mm-hmm. show. And they're just, the conversations that he has with people are just so touching, and it's such a good show. Oh, I'm so glad that you went and saw this. This is so great.
So he's presenting.
Yes.
At the festival.
Right.
And in order for us to go, a badge was like $300. We said no.
Mm-mm.
I would love to money. Hear him speak, but $300 times 2 is $600. And I don't know how many other acts we want to see.
Yeah.
For $600.
Right. Also, that's like, you know, a car payment or two. Like that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And it requires us to spend the whole weekend at the festival to make it worth it.
Right. Exactly.
Well, Johnny found out that they had a single event ticket. And the way this works is like standby, right?
Right.
Like you stand in line. And you wait until they give everybody who has fast passes for the event, everybody who has badges for the event, and then you get to come in.
Okay.
I said, well, it was like $33.
Well. Yeah.
And I said, you know what? It's worth $33. The other deal is if you don't get in, you get your money refunded.
Yeah, you might as well try. Why not?
So we buy our tickets. We get there about 90 minutes before the show starts, get in line. We're the second family in line.
Nice.
All of the fast passes go in, all of the badges go in. We get in. We're so excited.
Amazing.
We walk into the theater that holds about 250, 300 people. We realize there are seats in the front row. Wow. This is the television festival. It makes sense that people would not want to sit in the front row because they think they are there just for screening.
Right.
And so you want to sit in the middle and
where you can see
few rows up and have a great view of the screen.
Right.
But we know that this is Phil speaking about this episode. And talking to the audience.
Oh
so if we can sit through 45 minutes
of your neck up in the air.
Up and craning your necks and all that, and then hear him speak, we want to be in the front row.
Right. Totally.
So he came and sat in the front.
Yay.
And then he came out and spoke. They took questions from the audience.
Oh, I know where this is going.
So John raises his hand.
Of course he does. Yep.
So John gets called on and says, we're going to New York for a week. We already have reservations at Peter Luger, which if you watch the New York episode, he
talks about.
Peter Luger.
Yep, exactly.
He says, but we're bringing our 10-year-old. Where should we go? And Phil looks straight at us and says, okay, you got to go to Cafe Panna. Your 10-year-old daughter is going to love it.
Oh.
They even have an ice cream flavor called Somebody Scoop Phil.
Oh, And I could just see his sweet little happy face with his big smile. And oh,
right? Oh. It was amazing. But that is not even the best part. Because the best part was after we got to interact with him.
Yes.
At the end, John walks up to him and said, "Hey, man, we love your show. And when your dad died, I did a tribute to him."
Oh my gosh.
As a dad, talking about how important your dad was to you.
Oh.
And just what a great guy he was, only from watching him on TV.
Yeah.
And Phil's face. Okay. Again, this is the man that I would say is the embodiment of kindness.
Yeah.
Okay. He has never met a stranger, just values relationship over everything else.
You can tell it seems to matter to him quite a bit.
His shoulders drop, his face relax, and he looks at John and he says, "Oh, you're kidding.
Oh my gosh. My dad."
Oh. And it was just like, oh my gosh. How yeah. can I love you more?
Oh my gosh. Here's what you need to know about this. You guys took a picture with Phil.
Yes.
And my husband, who is a huge Phil fan, also usually like I can show him something on my phone. He's like, eh. You know what I mean? Like it'll be an adorable right. puppy. Unless it's a Dalmatian or a Sharpei, he really doesn't care. Or a koala. That's how I can get my husband to be like, oh, look how cute. Otherwise, no. But
or a 10-year-old in a cockroach costume.
Yeah, that was hysterical. But I showed him a picture of you guys and Phil, and it took him a second. He's like processing it. And when I tell you that it probably took about 3 or 4 seconds, but when it happened, he was like, like he just got so like excited and lit up. And he's like, wait, what's happening? What's going on? And I was like, Jenny and John, like all the time, Jenny and John just like do the things and have the experiences. And of course, this is what happened. And he was like, we're watching that show right now. And like immediately starts like looking for which episode he wants. So he was so excited about it. It was so cool. Like, it's awesome.
Well, and you know, they say like you can't meet your heroes, right? They say that a lot.
If you like, if you do, you're going to be disappointed. That kind of thing. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But Phil is the same guy.
Hmm.
And that was really fun.
That's so special. Oh, that's definitely a gem. My story is not that good. My story is just ridiculous.
I talked about professional wrestling as a sport.
Fair point. All right. So here's mine. I'm putting my child to bed. Sometimes at night we watch like 1 minute like TikTok animal videos, like a panda or something from an aquarium or whatever. Right. But it started with the videos on Headspace that are underneath their focus tab, and it's like wildlife videos, and they're for like 10 minutes and it's just supposed to kind of reset you. And I firmly believe that watching videos of animals and like aquariums can actually be really calming.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I do this. You know, this is my thing.
Well, and I love a good aquarium, real life or on video.
Right. Well, and what I did in my classroom was when I needed my kids to be focused and quiet, I would put on a YouTube video of an aquarium and let the, you know, plinky plunky calming music that sounded like a spa be playing in the whole classroom. And it really helped to kind of chill everybody out. And when kids needed to take a break and like stare at something, they would stare at the fish instead of staring at some other kid's paper. And it made a big difference.
No, it's huge.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there. The point is the animal videos are calming. So today it's been an interesting day. I really needed to just like chill and not have my child be picky about which animal TikTok video you're going to watch. So I was like, okay, we will watch one of the videos in the meditation app, but we're not going to watch another one. The one that we're watching is called Playful Savannah, and it's a bunch of animals who are literally playing in the savannah. So there's a baby elephant chasing a bird, and there's some lion cubs that are wrestling, and it's very precious, right? And then there's a bunch of birds like hopping in the tall grass. And I was like, oh, I've never seen birds do that. And he goes, oh yeah, well, they're parasites. And I was like, they're what? And he goes, yeah, they're parasites. Honey, a parasite is like kind of like a bug. Like it's a creature that lives off of some other creature's body. I don't think that's what you mean here. And he was like, yeah, they're parasites, you know, like birds of parasites. And I had zero energy to laugh. But I was like, I think you mean birds of paradise. But I don't think the birds of paradise live in the savannah. I think birds of paradise live in the jungle. And I think that they're plants. And he was like, no, they're birds. That's why they're called birds. And I was like, "I'm not, you know okay. what? I'm not having this fight with you tonight. I don't have the Absolutely. Energy for it.
I
right.
am looking at my watch. It says half an hour past bedtime.
Right. I'm out. Right. So nice. Birds of parasites live in the jungle, but they're not parasites. They're paradise. And he was like, okay. But when I tell you that I like had to step out of the room and then process what happened, I had to like run down the hall away from my kid's bedroom. Otherwise he would have heard me laughing hysterically. And like just outside his door. I had to bolt. Oh my gosh.
I have a story about that.
Okay. Right.
I had a kid during our recess pick up something that he found and use it to taunt and tease and minorly threaten his classmates. Okay.
Right now I have the episode of Parks and Rec in my head playing where the boys are throwing bags of dog poop at each yes, other. Yes. That's what I have in my head.
Yes. He picked up poop. He picked it up with a leaf and he's like, watch out, I got the poop.
Oh, gross.
So I had to turn him in, right? Like, yeah. I have to escalate this.
Oh my gosh.
And so I go to the assistant principal and I'm like, so today we will call him Thomas. It's not his name, but we'll say, so I go to the assistant principal and I'm standing there with Thomas and I say, during recess, Thomas chose to pick up some dog poop and threatened to wipe it on his classmates.
With a straight face. You had to say this. And with a straight face.
And the assistant principal says, so what was your plan for this poop? What were you going to do with this poop? Are you really going to be the kid who carries poop? And I'm not even kidding you, Caitlin. I had to walk away. And this is when I'm wearing a mask.
Yeah.
I cannot hide my face even behind a mask. I had to walk away because I am dying.
Oh, my goodness.
What is your plan for this poop?
What is your plan for this poop? Oh, my gosh.
Do you want to be the boy who carries poop?
Ew, that is true. Like, no. Those kids will never forget that he was the kid who had poop in his hands. They'll never forget it. Oh, man. How do you keep a straight face? There's some stuff like that.
I did it. Yeah. And at the end, I even told her, I was like, if you don't get an Oscar for that, I don't know who deserves one. Because, and I told her, I was like, I had to walk away because I was laughing. She was like, oh, is that why you took his break? And I was like, yeah, it's not because I was super mad. It's because I could not keep a straight face.
Oh my gosh. I mean, the things that kids will do and say, like, I love it so much.
Poop with your bare hands and then tried to wipe it on your friends. Like, I'm going to laugh at that.
Yeah. Speaking of birds of parasites, like, yeah. There it is, right there in your hand, you grossy. Do you have any obsessions right now that I need to know about? Share with me.
I'm obsessed with two things. Okay. The first one is this Epic, E-P-I-C is the brand, Epic Salmon Jerky.
Oh, I thought you were using a descriptor. Okay. No. Okay.
It is both an adjective and a noun in this case.
I understand.
It's like really good. And I bought it because it was low carbohydrate and available in the gas station.
Yeah.
And I am sad that it's gone. It is super great. Now, if you do not like fish, you will not like this. It tastes of fish. But if you love fish, this is amazing.
Does it smell fishy when you open the bag?
Yes.
Okay.
It is salmon jerky.
Human cat food.
Yes. Yes. It is 100% something that I would purr about.
Perfect. Stop. Ew. That's a new level in our friendship right there.
kidding.
I accidentally stumbled upon this video. I think it's called My Strange Obsession or My Weird Obsession. It's like a TLC show.
Okay.
But we learned about it because Abigail and I, as you know, were working on her cockroach project. And there was a girl who was weirdly obsessed with cockroaches. Now, in the same episode. Yes. Like an 8-year-old girl who like bred them and trained them to do circus stunts. And she has thousands of cockroaches in her house, which is disgusting. And the dad was like, I'm not a big fan of the cockroaches. I'm like, I wouldn't let my kid keep cockroaches.
I would not ever let that happen.
Yeah. Never, ever. One of these like Madagascar hissers, like, okay, you can have one bug in a tank, but like breeding cockroaches? No, thank you. Sorry.
I'm not even, nope.
So anyway, on this show, it's from TLC. I don't know if it's My Strange Obsession or My Weird Obsession or just like I'm weirdly obsessed with something. But one of them is this lady is obsessed with Mickey Mouse. Loves Mickey Mouse. Has thousands of Mickey Mouse things in her house.
This feels unhealthy.
Oh, it's gross. Moved to Celebration, Florida. Which, if you don't know what Celebration is, it's the town that Disney made.
Oh. Okay.
And the whole episode is about how she has, you know, 10,000 Mickeys, and she has one in every single room except their bedroom. They're not allowed to have Mickeys in their bedroom because the husband's like, I can't sleep with Mickey Mouse or whatever.
We're probably watching it. Like, I bet she has Mickey jammies, so I'm sure he's not.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. She has Mickey everything. I'm surprised she doesn't have like Mickey toothpaste. Okay. It's gross.
We love you, Disney.
Yeah. Oh, please.
If you want to sponsor us.
I 100% drink the Disney Kool-Aid. Okay.
Yeah.
We have given a lot of our dollars to Disney. We have another trip booked for this year after we just went last year. Okay.
Yeah.
We love Disney, but I do not have 10,000 Mickeys.
No.
Okay. So we're watching this. Me, 38 years old. Abigail, 10 years old. Kit, 3 years old. And I said, this Mickey Mouse obsession is kind of weird. My 3-year-old, deadpan, looks at me and says, and kind of creepy too. I was like, yeah, Kit, you're right. It is kind of creepy too.
My gosh. Oh, that's something that you have to write down and like keep it forever. That's so funny.
And this is a kid who loves Mickey Mouse, Funhouse, Clubhouse, Hot Dog Dance, the whole crap. He's into it. But he even says, like, this lady's creepy.
You know, we sing the hot dog song, like, regularly. Like, I sing that song all the time to try and get Sam moving. Like, if he's not getting up to do things, like, at first I'll try, like, okay, how would a cheetah go get dressed? how would a cheetah do it? Because he'll be like, oh, and he's cheetahs are fast. And he'll like go and do things. But when that doesn't work and I want to annoy him and make him start moving, I sing the hot dog song.
I mean, we've all done it. Like, how long can you swim underwater? 1,000.
Yeah.
Two.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's underwater now. Stop counting.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that was 17. Great job. Yeah. If I'm obsessed with salmon jerky, what's on your heart today?
Okay, so we couldn't take it anymore. During COVID summer, the summer of COVID, when everyone was buying outdoor materials for their kids to play with, and a blow-up pool was like 3 times the regular price.
Right, right, right. And impossible to find.
I put myself on a Target wait list, and I got myself an inflatable pool, and I think I tried to buy it like 4 times before that, and I finally managed to get one. Well, it's a pain to blow up all the time. And even with a motorized pump, it was still a pain. And
had one and it molded.
Yeah. So we had,
it was so gross. It had mildew all in.
Oh, it was so gross. And you don't want to be constantly like, just, we didn't have a cover or anything. It was just like a blow up pool, but it would take a while to fill up and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, one time we dumped it out last summer. And then when we dumped it out, we put it up against a tree, and then the tree like had a piece of bark that we weren't aware of, and we punctured a hole in the pool. So it was a sad day. And then we were
now you just have a tarp.
Apparently. Well, I tried to use that. What's the infomercial with the guy who slaps the sticker on the thing, and it plugs up a pool.
Yes,
it plugs up a boat. Yeah, that stuff. I tried to use one of those stickers. Yeah.
You know, I kicked a hole through my classroom wall one year.
Okay, Andy Bernard.
I was doing a demonstration and I forgot that I was wearing heels, and I've done this demonstration in flats year after year after year about how hard you push at a wall. If you don't do any movement, then you haven't done any work. It's just a lot of force and no distance. And I was wearing heels the day that I did it and put the heel right through the wall. And then one of my kids got that flex tape and
flex
patched
seal.
The hole with the flex. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
You're like, oh, Miss GK, I got you.
That's nuts. Like, I am hearing Andy go, that was an overreaction in my head over and over again. So
I have some anger.
Yeah, a little bit. They're sending me to management training, anger management, but still. So this year I was like, okay, forget it. Like, my child is going to camp half days. So he's got half day camp for most of the summer. And I was like, I still have to work. Like, we still have to get things done. What are we going to do with him at the end of the day when we can't really like leave our area to get, you know what I mean? So we bought an above ground pool. Yeah. If I haven't already sung its praises, Amazon Treasure Truck had an above ground pool on sale. And I was like, listen, we need to pull this trigger right here. So I'm just waiting on all the chemicals to show up, but you better believe I filled it up and Sam was in it for the first day. We have to actually like maintain it like a regular pool, which is kind of annoying. Right. But once, you know, we're both home more over the summer and all that, then yeah, he's going to get thrown in it every single day. Like it's just going to be what we do.
I believe it. It is a giant pool from what I've seen.
It's 14 feet across and it is huge. So, I mean.
Oh, hang on. Yes, hello? Oh, it's the space station calling to ask about your pool.
I mean, listen, we got it for $100 off. It wasn't an outrageous spend. We got it for less than what one of those TV passes would have been for one person for the whole event.
Oh, that you're there talking you go.
About. So we got a friend less than that. So, I mean, it worked out fine. We're just going to throw our child in it every day. So that's going to be the plan. But I'm very excited to have that in our backyard. The other thing I'm obsessed with, because the redhead, despite the fact that she has an above ground pool and she's going to be outside all summer long, the redhead over here doesn't tan. She burns. So I have to put on a bunch of sunscreen, which means I end up pasty all summer long, which is fine. I've learned to accept the fact that I will never tan and someday my freckles will just connect and it'll be fine. But in the meantime, I am using self-tanning lotion. And I know that stuff often smells weird, but did you know that Jergens makes an in-shower body lotion that is a self-tanner?
No.
In-shower.
So
in-shower.
I have never done self-tanner. I am the cancer queen and I have done the lay in the cancer beds.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. I would have burned after like 3 minutes.
Multiple times in my life.
Yeah. No, I would have burned after 3 minutes. Like I could never do it. I used to go do the airbrush tanning. Remember, you would go to like find a place that would do the airbrushing on you. I used to do that. And then I would end up like sitting with my arms and legs like spread wide because you can't touch anything for a solid 24 hours. And I would smell like those places. But no, I couldn't do that. But this stuff, it's an in-shower body lotion. You put it on and then you just kind of pat dry afterwards, but you can rinse off underneath the shower water so you don't get it on your hands and have your palms turn orange.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it was hard to find at CVS. Like, it was clearly sold out, but I did find it at the local grocery store. If you're in Texas, you can find it at HEB, but it's Jergens, just their in shower self tanner lotion. It's great. I really like
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's time for our real talk.
Yes. Yeah, it's June.
It's June. Pride Month. It's Pride Month. So, y'all know my obsession with vocabulary and making sure we have access to the terms so we can understand how to engage with others inside a certain community. So here's what we did. I found my, as she calls herself, token member of the LGBTQ community. Now, I have friends who are in the community. It's not just her, but she called herself a token, so I'm going to go with it. But I brought in Ariella to explain several LGBTQ terms and definitions within the community so that when you are talking to someone, you know how to say things in a respectful tone and still sound like you've done a little bit of homework, because it is your job as the person outside of the community to learn about the community before you engage. So we're going to go ahead and cut to the interview with Ariella, and you'll learn a little something, and then we'll come back to you on the other side. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started with our lesson for today. So it's me. I'm here with Ariella. And for those of you who are unaware, all the logos on all the Twitters and all the social media things are changing to rainbow colors because it's Pride Month. And I really, really thought it was important to, Jenny and I both did, felt like it was important to honor all things Pride Month. So because ultimately we are a how-to show, and y'all know that I have a thing with vocabulary and wanting to make sure that you can access the information by understanding the words, I thought it would be important to share some of the terms that people use to self-identify if they are a part of the LGBTQIA plus community. So Ariel is here. Say hi.
I'm here.
And Ariella, can you tell everyone why you're here today?
I'm the token queer friend who agreed to do this.
To be fair, I do have multiple friends who are part of the community, but
no,
that's really funny that that's the way you busted that out.
No, I'm just busting chops. I'm just busting chops because I was like, hey, can I be on your show and do something for Pride Month? So I
was all about it. Yeah. I love it.
Right. No, it was definitely not because I'm the token queer friend. I'm the token queer friend who really wanted to be on the podcast again and was looking for an excuse. So
it works. It works well.
I'm here to talk about Pride vocab.
So I think that just for anyone who's not a part of the community, there's a couple of words that define that I use to self-identify that I think would be important for other people to know. And these words are used within the community, and I just want to put them out there. So the first one that I want to talk about is cisgender. So you might hear that commonly referred to as cis, right? And this just describes a person who self-identifies with the gender that they are assigned at birth. It's on their birth certificate. It says female. You present yourself as female. You feel like a female. The same would be true for a male who is born a male, identifies as a male, and presents himself as a male. And you use the pronouns that describe that particular gender, right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to describe it. It's just somebody who they identify with the sex and the gender that they were identified as at birth. And that's kind of the end of it. What you might see, in case it does come up, I had to look it up like a while ago, is you may see cishet. So cishet. And that is a shortened form of cisgender heterosexual. So you have a cisgendered person who is also straight.
Understood.
So you might see cishet male or cishet female. So that is a person who is both cisgendered and straight.
That's helpful because I hadn't heard that. And as someone who like wants to make sure that I'm describing myself appropriately to people who ask, that's a really good term to know. So one of the things that we're all about on this show is just addressing any sort of stereotypes that might come up. And one of the things that I've seen quite a bit outside of the community is this term heteronormativity, right? Which is just assuming that everyone in your life has the same heterosexual relationships that you do, right? Assuming that everyone around you is heterosexual, and therefore you are completely ignoring an entire community of people who does not identify that way.
Yes. It's basically like straight is the default would be a kind of quick and dirty way to describe heteronormativity. It would just be like straight is the default. You kind of just assume that every person that you meet is straight, that they're in a straight relationship, that everything in our culture is for straight people. Yeah, straight as the default is probably just like the too long didn't read definition of that.
That's really interesting because, like, to me, I almost hear that word and I think like, ew, like it makes me feel badly that I may have had those feelings in the past. It's almost like someone calling you out on something that feels kind of icky. Like maybe, you know, you're seeing your own biases and it makes you uncomfortable. So seeing that word and seeing the definition and then actually thinking about it and processing it, you know, that's a big deal. I think that that's pretty common for a lot of heterosexual, especially cishet people, to just kind of have this, you know, straight is the default relationship, right? So I don't know. I that word, I don't want to say it's triggering, but it is something that has given me pause so that I will stop and reflect. Because I mean, I'm thinking of friends in my life who recently self-identified as not heterosexual. And so, I mean, me having not even thought about it, I don't think that I was necessarily biased against that. But it didn't occur to me to even wonder or ask the question. And that has since, you know, changed in my life. And I've been more mindful of asking questions that are more respectful of all types of relationships. Like, you know, do you have a partner that you interact with? Or who are your grown-ups at home for those of us who are teachers, right? So making sure that we address that heteronormativity bias that we might have.
Definitely. And I think, you know, for people like us who are, you know, older millennials, you know, the elders of the millennials, you know, we grew up still in a time where, you know, it was still not a good thing to be part of the queer community. Queer, you know, as a word was not a good thing.
Right.
And we can talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But, you know, we still grew up at a time where it was not... pride wasn't a thing. Like, I mean, it was, but it wasn't like, well, you weren't finding pride stuff at Target.
No, you wouldn't have been seeing Old Navy with their like non-gender conforming clothing. Like, no, that wasn't a thing. Right. It's still not a thing. That's brand new. Right. So
exactly. Like, yeah. So that's a lot of, that's a lot of unlearning even for like, even for me who came out as bi last year. You know, it's, you know, who were my bisexual role models in the 90s, you know?
Did you have one? Was there one that we could have thought about? Yeah. I don't know.
Because even, you know, even in like the 90s, bisexuals were depicted as just, you know, like women who like to make out with other women for the benefit of men, you know, like,
That's it.
You know, it was like all these really like gross stereotypes that still kind of persist in the community. But, you know, like who wants to identify as that? You know,
right.
Like who wants to see themselves in that sort of. And I think, you know, what's really cool about the kids, you know, growing up now, you know, like
the youths.
Those kids, those little kids. Uh-huh. Yeah, the little ones are going to grow up with this being a lot more normal. So I think they'll grow up with less heteronormativity. Like they're not going to grow up assuming, you know, that somebody is straight. Whereas we in our, you know, in our generation still have a lot of unlearning to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned earlier the term queer, and I seem to hear, like, again, as you were saying, when we were kids, that was not a word that you were using. If one used it, you were not being kind, right? No. Like that was not a kind word, but I do hear it more and more and I'm seeing it more and more, especially as people who are within the community sort of start talking about their experiences and things like that. So can you just give me a little bit more about that word, what we're actually talking about when we use that word, and just some background with it?
Yeah, so it's basically an umbrella term for people who fall outside the gender and sexuality, quote unquote, norms. And historically, it was a negative term, you know, even I believe within the community. So we're talking about, you know, like, you know, when we were, you know, coming of age. So in the 90s and, you know, early 2000s, it was not, it was still a derogatory word. And I don't know when it started getting reclaimed by the LGBTQIA community, but it did. And now it's, you know, by a lot of people seen as something wonderful and something good and something positive. But there still are a lot of older people in the community who still have harsh memories of that word and still have the negativity kind of lingering sort of over them with that word. So much like I'm getting better with using the word queer, you know, I did it earlier, but if somebody ask me, like if somebody were to ask me, like, you know, how do you, you know, what's your sexual orientation? Like, I wouldn't say queer, I would say bisexual. I'll say it sometimes because it's easier and it flows off the tongue a little bit faster, but it's not, it's only been recently where I feel comfortable using it because of, you know, my generation's, you know, upbringing with that word.
So then is the lesson then that when you're talking to a member of the community, like maybe listen first and just see if that word comes out of their mouth, and if it does, then perhaps it's okay for you to use it in that conversation? Or is the lesson like stay away from the word altogether?
I would say the lesson is more just, you know, listen to how people are talking. And also you can always ask if it's coming up in conversation, you know, you can always say, how do you identify, you know, do you identify as queer, or you do, you know, how do you, you know, how would you describe yourself? And, you know, and a person can tell you. It's much like asking a person's pronouns, you know, like if they don't have it on them somehow, like on a name tag or anything, they can tell you exactly, you know, what they want to be called and how they identify. So it's perfectly okay. You know, I don't think like you would, like if it wasn't in conversation, you know, you wouldn't just like walk up to a new friend and be like, hey, how do I identify? You know, I mean, I can't see that.
Like, awkward.
Yeah, like I don't really, but I like if it's in conversation and, you know, it's always okay to just, you know, say, well, how do you identify? And, you know, that person can give you, you know, the rundown of all the ways that they identify.
Well, that makes, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I'm also seeing a lot more people who would consider themselves to be cishet actually self-identifying themselves. So for example, in my email signature for work, I have my pronouns in my email signature for work, and I'm trying to signify to others that I understand that not everyone identifies the same way that I do. So I feel like that kind of leads us right into gender identity issues, right? Like our gender identity vocabulary. Can you speak a little bit about that so that our listeners have a little bit more context and can use appropriate terminology here?
Yeah. And there, you know, there are so, so many terms, and, you know, in this, like we could be recording here for hours just going over the entire vocabulary. So like, here's, you know, we're talking about just the terms that might come up more often, and then, you know, have an exhaustive list that people can go and look at to kind of get, you know, down to the details. So gender identity, just broadly speaking, is a person's genuine, internal, deeply rooted identification as a man, both a man, woman, both, or neither, And all people have a gender identity, not just transgendered people. Transgender or trans, as people, you know, might hear others identify, it describes a person whose gender identity is different from what is generally considered typical for their sex assigned at birth.
So I'm just wondering, is someone who identifies as trans, they're using that term, they're going to have different pronouns from what they were assigned at birth. Mm-hmm. Trans, does that mean that they're in the process of transitioning from one gender to the other? Like, how does that question make sense?
Yeah, I think it does make sense. And my understanding, and as somebody who is not trans, I cannot speak to this, like, in my personal experience as an expert, but the way that I have learned to understand it as it does describe a person who has transitioned to a gender.
Maybe to the new pronouns, that they're choosing, or.
Yeah, I see. It could be. There's different types of transition. So you have social transitions where you are, you know, socially the gender that you are now identifying as. Maybe you change your pronouns, you know, maybe you're out and about. And then there's also the physical transformation and the physical transitions, where that would be maybe using hormone blockers or, getting top or bottom surgery or anything that would affirm
your new physical. Okay. I see what you're saying. Not new physical, but it would affirm the pronouns. It's the way that you're presenting yourself. Right. So it would be the physical. Okay. So just so that I'm clear, it is not okay to assume that someone who is trans is also physically transitioning from one to another. It is completely possible to just present oneself as the gender that you self-identify as, but not be transitioning physically at all.
Right. Exactly. Like, you could, I have learned quite a bit from a lot of trans content creators on TikTok. And this was something that I also thought, that somebody who is, you know, transgendered, that they were going to undergo some kind of physical transition. And that is not the case. Not everybody wants to physically transition, and they feel affirmed just by wearing clothes that affirm, you know, how they see themselves, or other things, you know, and transitioning in other ways. So it definitely shouldn't be assumed that a person who is trans is at any point going to do something physically. They might, but assuming would be incorrect, I think.
So, I mean, I think that this is one of the ones that really confuses a lot of people. You know, as humans, we are so wired to organize, right, and categorize things. And when there's someone who doesn't fit a particular mold, because trans could be any, it's such a wide spectrum of people that I'm seeing and learning about. So this one, I think, is something that a lot of people outside of the community really struggle with, just because it is so different and there isn't a category. I mean, that's why this one word can describe literally hundreds of different combinations of people describing themselves. Right.
And I think it's one of those things that it's especially hard for people to sort of empathize with, in the sense that if you are cisgendered, so you are sure of your gender from the moment that you were born, it can be really hard to wrap your head around somebody who doesn't feel that way. Yeah. And I know that I had a hard time, you know, because my instinct is to always just want to understand, and like the inability to wrap my head around something, it it's like I just keep wanting to do that. Right. And eventually I got to a point where I accepted and acknowledged that I am just not going to understand. I'm not going to understand how this person is feeling. And once I was able to kind of do that, any blocks that I had to educating myself, like completely went away. And I think that's what a lot of people need to do. They just need to like stop trying to understand it. And like, stop trying to understand, when I say that, stop trying to understand how a person feels and just take them at their word, you know?
We talk about validating feelings, right? Like, it's okay that you feel stressed. It's okay that you feel angry. It's okay that you feel mad or sad or glad or happy or whatever. So in this sense, this is a feeling that this person has, that they feel as though this is who they are. So just validate and accept.
Yeah.
To me, that's the way to, I love that idea of just like, you'll never understand. So just validate and accept.
Right.
Well, not never understand. You'll never understand exactly where that feeling is coming from. So just, yeah.
Right. I mean, like we could look at it as being, you know, two white women are never going to truly understand what a woman of color is going to go through. Like we're just not. And right. I think, and like, once we can sit there and acknowledge like, no, like as a white woman, I cannot understand what a woman of color is going through in their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. I think once you can just say, no, I will never understand what a trans person is feeling or a non-binary person is feeling when it comes to gender, it really just kind of opens up, you know, the level of just being able to just like understand more,
right,
you know, about that person and how they express their gender identity. Like once you stop trying to like understand exactly what they're going through, you can just pay attention to just the beautiful ways that they express themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going back to your race analogy. You're right. As two white women speaking right now, we will never be able to understand, but we can validate the experience by saying, I take you at your word. What you're saying is your truth. I'm going to believe your truth and accept it and then work towards a level of understanding from there.
Right.
That's a great way to apply that same logic that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Let's move on from that one because that one we could probably talk about just that one alone. You could talk about that word.
Oh yeah.
For and hours.
And as somebody who is not, you know, who is cisgendered, I would say that's about as far as comfortable as I am speaking about it. And having a trans person speak or a non-binary person, like really get into the nitty gritty of like that experience or in that level of education is definitely up to like that, you know, a person from that part of the community.
Sure. And I feel like also this is a good time to mention, like I as a person who's not a part of the community at all, just considers myself to be an ally and has for a number of years at this point. I had to look up these terms. I had to look them up. I had to go learn what these words were. I mean, a lot of them I've heard the slang term or the shorthand or whatever, but I still didn't know exact definitions and I would have used these incorrectly. So, I mean, having you here as someone who is one, an excellent researcher, but two, someone who is very empathetic, especially within the community, it's very helpful for me. So at no point are we saying that we are experts on any of this, but just having this material come from someone who is a part of the community is meaningful to me personally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
With that said, let's keep going because there's more in here about gender identity that I don't know. So what else am I missing?
So we touched upon non-binary as an identifier or NB, which is pronounced NB, like the letter N and the letter N and the letter B, which I don't know why it took me so long when I would see NB, like E-N-B-Y, like Like, I don't know why it took so long for it to click that it was pronounced NB, like non-binary. Like, I don't know.
It's like, almost like the word NV, like you're envious of something, like right. that word, but just a B instead of the V. But also, right. for some reason, my mind went straight to Enya, and I know that that's not exactly what the word is at all. It's not yeah, even close to the word, but for some reason, Enya is what just popped into my head. So I'm not saying Enya identifies as any of these things. I'm just saying that's when I see NB on the screen, like that's where.
You're just saying that my brain is tired.
My brain is tired. It makes
the weird connections.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. It made sense in here. It doesn't make sense coming out of my mouth. Right. Okay. Yeah. Go for it. Let's talk about NB or non-binary.
Right. So this is a term used by a community of people whose gender identity exists outside of the gender binary of male and female. So we're always thinking of male, female, but gender is actually a spectrum. And how people express their gender is somewhere on that spectrum. But when we talk about the gender binary, we're talking about male and female. When we think about gender as a spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, non-binary people are people who just live somewhere on that spectrum, and they're living outside of the male and female
labels. Right, the labels, right?
Right. Okay. They're living somewhere on that spectrum. And, you know, where they are is going to be deeply personal. So this is where you might see pronoun usage as like she/they, you know, or he/they. And, you know, where they are kind of on that day, you know, they might feel like they're expressing their gender a little bit differently. And this is something that is going, like I said, is deeply personal to people, how they express their gender. So there's really no way of sort of diving into
deeper
without kind of having somebody from that community describe their own experiences with how they express their gender and how they see gender. But, you know, very simply speaking, they are people who live on the gender spectrum, and they see themselves neither as always male or always female.
This is really interesting because, I mean, how many of us heard the term as kids, like tomboy, right? Like, and what was that supposed to describe? It was supposed to describe a girl who was very interested in participating in like traditionally patriarchally male activities, right? Boy activities.
Right.
But she, I mean, you know, the movie Now and Then.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're the same. Yeah, we're the same. So, but I'm just thinking about like just the spectrum of girls in that, right? Like they're very different girls, and then they become very different women.
Right.
But Roberta would have been considered the tomboy. I mean, she grew up with a bunch of brothers and all that. This is me aging myself so badly. but I mean, just within this group of four girls, there was a difference in how they identified themselves just there. So thinking about it as a spectrum actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think tomboy is actually a really good way for people in, I don't even know if it's like really kind of used anymore, but you know, for people who like for millennials, you know, like I definitely self-identified as a tomboy when I was a kid because I hated wearing dresses. I hated doing girly things. Mm-hmm. I, you know, liked my jeans and my sneakers, and I liked to play sports. And, you know, we kind of always described a tomboy as just a girl who liked to look and play like the boys. Mm-hmm. When really, you know, if you kind of think about it, like that was just 12-year-old Ariella's where I sat on the gender spectrum. It was, you know, where I identified on the gender spectrum was a girl who, you know, saw herself in more masculine clothing, or, you know, a more masculine, I guess,
energy, you know, vibes, energy, whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
transgender, we've talked about non-binary. Is there something else within this gender identity spectrum terminology that I should probably know, or that our listeners should know?
I think intersex is one. It's the I in the LGBTQIA. And I think intersex people tend to be forgotten quite a bit in the community. And this is the current term that's used to refer to people who are biologically between the medically expected definitions of male and female. So this can be through variations in hormones, chromosomes, internal or external genitalia, or a combination or all primary and secondary sex characteristics. So this is not necessarily going to be anything that you are going to physically see. And, you know, the way an intersex person might, you know, express their gender is, again, going to be deeply personal, but I feel like it's something that it's a phrase and it's a group of people within the community that seems to kind of fall through the cracks a little bit. And so I think it's good to kind of just highlight that this section of the community does exist.
Do you think, because to me, intersex and trans sound very much like they could go hand in hand, if not overlap or be similar. I mean, if you're transitioning in as physically as someone who is transgender, could you then be termed intersex? Like, I feel like that might be why sometimes this community or this particular subgroup gets lost. Do you think that people are confusing the term?
Maybe people are confusing the term. So intersex would be more like it's more something that kind of happens at birth. So if you are a person, you know, as a baby comes, you know, you are birthed from your parent and you have, you know, variations in your, you know, genitalia. So, you know, we have heard, you know, stories where where they're not exactly sure, you know, is it a boy or is it a girl? You know, that kind of.
Yeah, they did a Law and Order episode about one of those with the twins.
Right.
Where they raised one as male and one as female. And then it came out that really what had happened was a botched surgery very early on in the child's life. Okay, so that would be an example of someone who would be intersex. Someone who, these are something that they're maybe were born with, or throughout the course of development, this was happening inside their body. And so because of that, they present differently. Okay, that's very helpful to understand.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Whereas, you know, trans people may have been assigned, female at birth or assigned male at birth, but that is not, that does not match the gender that, you know, they believe self-identify. Themselves. Okay. Yeah. They self-identify as, whereas somebody who is intersex, there are medically or biological markers. So this is more of a, like, I don't want to say a medical condition.
No, because that implies that there's an illness there, or that there's something wrong. That's not the term, but this is maybe more an inherited set of traits that you were born with, that your body is presenting based on the hormone chemistry within your body.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I think there might be people who kind of get those two mixed up. But I think if you think of intersex as something that is more, you know, it's more about anatomy and biology.
This also, I mean, it could be also, this is such a small, like, it's so rare to have that happen medically, biologically, anatomically, that maybe that's part. It does seem like it would be a small group of people. That's not to say that they should be ignored by any means, but it does make sense that they might sort of get lost within this community because, again, they could present as someone who is trans, but they may just choose to take that on for themselves. But it is just a rare thing for that sort of circumstance to be a part of someone's life. So, and I think often when that does happen, there are parents who work very hard to ensure a quote unquote normal childhood for that child, whatever that may or may not look like. So there might be an element of unnecessary or forced like shame or something that could come on from that too, because you are different from everyone else and you've always been different from everyone else and your parents have worked to maybe possibly hide that from other people. So that to me, it's not surprising that it gets overlooked, but it is something that I do intend to be more mindful of, knowing mm-hmm. now what the actual term means and how it's yeah. distinct from a transgendered person.
Yeah.
Okay, so that, I feel like that's a pretty good summary of gender identity mm-hmm. vocabulary. I think we touched on a lot there.
Y'all had a great talk. That was awesome.
I think so too. She's such a good researcher and she is so empathetic, and just having her words, like well thought out and kind words, come out, and she's so willing to teach others. It's really great having her on the show. Every time that she comes on, she's over here like, oh, I have any excuse to come on. The show, like this particular episode, was her brainchild. So, and we're going to bring her back for next week to do part two, because there was so much that we just couldn't get to in one episode.
That's amazing. You know, my school recently brought in a PhD to talk about the same topic and talk about the power of language and just understanding what these words mean and how they're used in context and how antiquated vocabulary can also hurt feelings.
Absolutely. So
not only is it too old, it's also unkind.
Right.
And one of the things that he brought up that I thought was really interesting was this idea of changing the language to reflect affection orientation. Mm. And that this is more than just, right? Like, this is, who do you connect with? And yeah. who do you find to match your soul? Right. And so I just loved the idea of honoring the idea that it's more than just what happens when the doors are closed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree. And at some point in our conversation, you know, and this, it might be next week that we talk about it, but she does talk about the difference between sexual orientation and sexual preference, and right. how that's a very, very important distinction to make. And, you know, one implies choice. Preference implies choice. It's literally exactly. your preference. And orientation is more respectful of the fact that this is the way that someone was born, and that's who you are. And the idea of affection orientation is a very interesting concept. I like that, because there are people in the community who will tell you it's not about the sexual attraction. It is purely about, who do I have a connection with? Who right. and what does that make me want to do in terms of a relationship with that person?
Exactly.
Just as someone who has had friends who came out to me, you know, at this point, almost 20 years ago, sorry, Trent, the life was very different then. The language was very different then.
And the options.
Right. I think that the people were always there, just not able to clearly define things. And I think that the more language we learn around the community, the more affirming it will be for people who are inside of it. Because I think there are people who feel, you know, labels don't necessarily mean anything. And Ariella and I got into this too, right? That labels can sometimes be unnecessary for certain people, right? They don't really necessarily need a label to define themselves. But for people outside of a community, a label can be particularly helpful, just so that there's an understanding. And if you're in the community, it's a way to affirm that you belong there. And I think that that's a really important thing that we need to talk about, just with any community, but in particular, this one where it is such a spectrum, having that understanding and having a name for something, for a particular affection that you have, for relationships that you like to engage in, those, that really matters. I think that what really struck me the most was just the word heteronormativity, just assuming that everyone around you
right.
is, quote, straight,
exactly
right?
Exactly the same way you do.
Right. And it's, that to me was the part I think that has been the biggest unlearning I've had to do, or relearning that I've had to do, is just remembering that instead of saying, oh, let's talk to your mom and dad about this to a student, I changed my language and I said, let's talk to your grown-ups about this. And I would send emails home that said, hi, grown-ups, because I wanted to affirm all the relationships that I knew were happening at home. And I need to do that same thing in relationships that I have outside of the classroom with other people where I need to say, right. Oh, you know, do you have a partner that you engage with? Something like that. Yeah. Even just that word partner is just so much more inclusive.
Yeah. Or are you married? Tell me your spouse's name.
Something like that. Right.
It's just the switching of one word instead of assuming that that person has a wife or a husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Giving the space to let them define themselves in the conversation. That right. was really special takeaway for me.
Mm-hmm. It's my time. And this is when I say that if you love us, you have to press the buttons. You have to press the buttons and you have to write down the words so that other people know to love us.
Mm-hmm.
So hit the stars and write the words that say, oh my gosh, CK and GK, they changed my life.
They changed my life. I now know which jerky to buy when I go to the gas station to get snacks.
Right?
Oh, my goodness.
I consider wrestling a sport now.
I don't have to be pasty all summer long if I don't want
right?
to.
Right? That's what I'm talking about. So like us, love us, subscribe, listen to us wherever you hear all of your favorite pods and tell all of your friends and make some good choices.
Yeah. And use your gift cards and include everyone in the language you use around relationships. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Hey friends, thanks for listening to the CK and GK podcast. Find us at CK and GK podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, or anywhere else that you pod. See you next time.